From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, our weekly conversation with BlackAgendaReport.com columnist Margaret Kimberly. Her Freedom Rider column this week is Trump, the DNC hacker.
I think the evidence points to him and or his associates. I got this information from an alert reader, and I had missed this story, that Nigel Farage, the former UKIP leader in the UK, the man who was most identified with the Brexit effort, had visited Julian Assange, was seen going into the Ecuadorian embassy in London. And at first, when he was asked why had he gone there, he claimed he didn't know or he didn't remember, something that made no sense. And a few days later, he got his story straight. He said, well, yes, I did meet Julian Assange. It's just because I admired him and wanted to meet him.
This is the head of UKIP, former head of UKIP, saying that.
Yes, yes. So it's pretty obvious that that's nonsense. And when you look at other evidence that other Trump associates had the means and a past history of doing things like this. And Roger Stone comes to mind, who is well known as a purveyor of the political dirty trick. Ever since he was a young man, he led a mob to stop the recount in Florida in 2000. He controlled Al Sharpton's with Sharpton's acquiescence, obviously, gave him money to upend Howard Dean's campaign in 2004 when Sharpton ran for president. Right. Roger Stone was involved in exposing former New York Governor Spitzer's involvement in a prostitution ring. And he also bragged about meeting, being in touch with, as he put it, with WikiLeaks and Assange. And WikiLeaks obviously are the group who exposed the DNC emails. So looking at all of this, and I have to say, as we've discussed before, I don't see any credible evidence that Russia had any involvement in this hacking. Hacking itself is technologically simple. It's not hard to do. But as we're starting to see with the Trump associates, doing it is one thing and trying to keep it together and secret is another, because Farage just going into the Ecuadorian embassy was very foolish. I mean, he's a very well-known figure. Everyone's always watching the Ecuadorian embassy in London because Assange is there. And that he was not prepared for having been recognized, it tells me there's some panic going on. And some of these people, Roger Stone is a big mouth. He's not very smart. He some months before Spitzer had to resign, he said publicly that Spitzer isn't going to serve out his full term. So he has this history of blabbing about his activities. So I think it's... the simple explanation is usually the best one. And we've been thrown off by this Russia bashing and saying correctly that there's no evidence of Russian involvement, but missing the more obvious answer. And I have to say that, again, I'm going to credit a reader who pointed this out to me. So, there's the Cambridge Analytica Group, a British political consulting firm, who have taken credit for the Brexit success and for Trump's campaign. They specialize in utilizing social media and utilizing Facebook and finding people based on the information we freely give on Facebook to determine likely voters and to motivate them to vote their way. And they have been involved in campaigns all over the world, some of it using technology, some of it just using manipulations and disruptions. So I think if you connect the dots, everybody's talking about the dots that connect to Russia. I think there are dots that connect to Trump. And that's more obvious. It's the sort of thing, you know, if it was a local campaign, from stealing yard signs to, you know, spreading a rumor, you always assume it's the opponent. And I think it was Hillary Clinton's opponent. I think it was Trump and or his associates who are responsible.
You know, the lineage, I guess the history of Stone actually goes back to Nixon. And, you know, we remember the dirty tricks involved there. And what's interesting is that it was Nixon, you know, his agents bugging the Democratic Party headquarters in 1972 mm-hmm. that led to his resigning. In you know, 3 years later, and that was that, you know, the original offense, and then the cover up was the you know, the series of crimes, I guess, that they used that in the actual impeachment proceedings. Mm-hmm. So, what you're talking about here, you know, I mean, it hangs on a few things. First of all, did Assange receive these documents from somebody, and mm-hmm. then? Stone and or Farange and or someone else do outreach and say, we hear you've got this stuff, give it up? Or did they go to him and say, take this stuff, you know, go get this stuff and give it to us? Or did they say, here's the stuff, you release it? I mean, there's a lot of possibilities there.
There are. I think the last one you mentioned, is that they gave it to him, is the thing that seems most likely to me. Of course, we don't know. And this congressional, these hearings in the House are all about Russia. And I don't think the Democrats are. I mean, this is a big story. It's huge, huge, as Trump would say. And I think it could do with some better investigatory resources than I have, you know, Googling at a computer. But,
well, that's more than the Times and the others seem to be doing. So, I mean,
yes,
that's
well, they are all interested in what they want is the war party, the Democrats and some Republicans too, is regime change in Russia, and all of their actions from meddling in Ukraine to putting NATO troops on Russia's border to the sanctions and the constant propaganda against Russia, it is all being used in an effort to destabilize that government. Russia is an enormous country. I think it has 8 time zones or something like that. It spans Asia and Europe, has huge energy resources of oil and natural gas in particular. And Europe survives with natural gas supplies from Russia. And the United States, at this stage of the crisis in capitalism, their only way to survive, a better way to survive would be to change the system we have.
No, but they have to steal more stuff instead.
More stuff. And right. Russia has too much stuff to be left alone right. and to be an independent actor, which is all it insists on doing, is to be left alone. Putin, all the provocations have come from the U.S. Putin, until very recently, kept referring to our American partners. He was always trying to make friends, whatever the United States did. So this is part of a larger effort. And this House hearings are Congressman Schiff from California, who was a former prosecutor, and everybody's, you know, bragging, well, he's a former prosecutor. Well, that doesn't impress me, because prosecutors make everybody look guilty. That's what they do. So he opened the hearings by claiming that, yes, Russia did it, and it was ordered by Vladimir Putin, which, of course, you cannot prove at all. So that's just a lie. And then proceeded to say this was an act of war. So Democrats have been using this phrase, act of war, a lot lately, which is very dangerous. Mm-hmm. And as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, the United States quite openly assisted Boris Yeltsin in 1996. So was that an act of war for the Bill Clinton associates to choose sides in a Russian election and undo the will of voters there? So it's very frightening that they're going to these lengths. And I think that is why the press has not paid attention to what I think is a far more logical scenario, that it was people allied with Trump who carried out this hack.
You know, to say that they assisted Boris Yeltsin back in 1996, when he needed assistance just to get off his bar stool and walk across the room, kind of understates the case. You could say that they stole the election and you know, so that he could remain in power.
Exactly.
You know, you have this Russiagate thing, or whatever the term of art is that you prefer for this mess. You know, proceeding ahead full steam today, Senators Burr and Warner are opening the Senate's version of HUAC 2.0. In the framework of this, you know, act of war having been committed by Russia against the United States, according to Adam Schiff. And, you know, we're looking at people are attacking Burr as if, in a way, and he's trying to act collegial, but as if he's going to be a patsy for Trump. In fact, he has already, and he was saying yesterday in a press conference that he and Warner did, well, we don't want to prejudge anything. 2 months ago, 3 months ago, he made a public statement that when Barack Obama said Russia hacked the election, that he agreed, you know, we agree on the basic facts. In other words, he's already prejudged it.
Yes.
And so it seems that you have two things going on. One is to try to take Trump out, and two is, you know, to do it in the context of some hostility towards Russia that can get piled upon after Trump is out of the way. I mean, the whole dynamic that's in place leads to a new president who's going to either go to or provoke a war with Russia.
Yes, and there's another question too, and that is, do they want to get rid of Trump? Do they want Trump impeached, or do they want to keep him around as a punching bag for him to be neutralized and discredited?
Right.
So I could, because it's important to remember, the Republicans did not want to get rid of Bill Clinton. They just wanted to attach enough mud to him to have some stick to Al Gore and keep Al Gore from winning. And well, they succeeded well with that in the vote theft in Florida. But I think that helped make it close enough that they were able to get away with it. So but they want to at least damage Trump considerably, and then use him to run against in 2018 and 2020, but there's another issue there. I think that's a losing scenario for Democrats. That's how they lost. Lost in the Electoral College was Hillary Clinton not making the case for herself and not bringing forth any new Democratic policies that people would find that would be popular. So instead they were, well, we'll just tell people how horrible Trump is. And that didn't work very well. So aside from the fact that this is unethical for other reasons, I don't even think it's smart politics. I don't think they can count on saying, look how horrible Trump is, as a way of winning.
Yeah, it didn't work last time.
No.
You know, normally you would do political analysis and look towards exactly those things, or, you know, positioning for 2018 and positioning for 2020. In the context of, you know, a real discussion about the real possibility of a war with Russia, can people hold those two thoughts in their head at the same time? I mean, it can't be that we on the outside are the only ones that see the risk of war with Russia. It can't be that everyone involved in this game doesn't see it and thinks that, or knows somehow, that there's no chance that that's going to happen. I mean, I guess it's possible that it can't happen and that they somehow know this and we just don't. But I'm wondering if those motivations apply as they normally would, given the fact that their game plan seems to be, it certainly seems to allow for a war with Russia.
Yeah, it just shows you the level of desperation that they're in trying to prop up this failing system, that they would risk war. I mean, what do they think is going to happen? This past week, there were demonstrations in Russia, and a man named Navalny, yeah. I believe his first name's Andrei, I'm not sure of it, but Navalny had protests, several thousand people in Moscow. And as soon as and he's known as an opponent of Putin, and I found it quite an amazing coincidence that at the time when the U.S. government is involved in this anti-Russia activity, that suddenly this spontaneous demonstration would spring up. And I would like to know where he gets money from. I would like to know who's pulling his strings, because my assumption is that this is just like the Maidan demonstrations in Ukraine, which ultimately brought down that elected government. So I think they're going to use all of these approaches. But when they talk about an act of war and they think they can do something to get a government, a Russian government that will do their bidding, I don't think they know what they're doing. I really don't. I think we have to trust Putin seems to be the only grown-up in the room, and we have to hope that he continues to be the one who is thoughtful and mature and thinks about the fate of the world and not any of the crazy Americans. So if they actually want war, do they think they can have a conventional war? Do they think nukes won't be used? It's all very, very frightening to me. I don't trust any of these people to make these decisions. They are provoking something terrible. And if you're talking about actual war between the U.S. and Russia, you're talking about the fate of the Earth being in the balance, the fate of all life on Earth.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Alexei Navalny is a 40-year-old.
Alexei.
Yeah, and he spent a year at Yale, apparently. Surprise, surprise.
Well, they all do. They, bring these people over here and get them on our side and get them to turn against their government. So I'm not surprised about that.
Yep. And he ran for mayor of Moscow, and he drew 27% of the vote. That's about how much clout he's got, and that's where he's from. So, and it's been interesting. I mean, it looks like they triggered this, from here as part of this game. And when I saw that they had sent people into the streets there with the things that are going on right now, it made me nervous that they were trying to provoke their crisis. But I guess it didn't catch fire.
No, it didn't. But it may not have been intended to. I think they'll, they will do things like this from time to time.
They're just coughing through the microphone to see how it sounds, just to get a sound check.
Yes, exactly. But I think the goal is pretty clear, is regime change in Russia. It's something Hillary Clinton was maneuvering to do. It's one of the reasons I did not want her to win, because I felt she was very dangerous. But it seems as though she might get her way anyhow, despite having lost. They are determined to do this, and they are determined to create this crisis in order to prop up something that should be disassembled anyway. And Trump and his people, they're just not, instead of leaving things alone, it's hard to say whether or not the revelations of these emails turn the tide, or Comey's decision late in the election to say he was still investigating her emails, the fact that she had entirely separate server, separate from the State Department, because she was hiding or trying to hide her continued involvement with the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton slush fund, it ought to be called. So it's hard to say if these things played a role in the way the election went. I think the tide had turned for Trump already by then, now that I think back on it. So they did something they didn't even need to do in order to win. But that's what happens when people think they're being slick. It was too clever by half, as the saying as the saying goes.
Right. Well, I guess now we're going to see this circus play out in the Senate, the Intel Committee there, and it's still playing out in the House. We had Monday. We were supposed to have Comey and his partner there coming in again, only this time in closed session, and they declined, which meant no hearing on Monday. Everybody's pointing fingers at each other. You're covering up this, and you're covering up that. And the only thing that's probably true is when each of them says that the other can't conduct a fair hearing, which is, you know, it's the classic statement about American politicians. You know that they're telling the truth when they accuse another politician of being a crook, because they're almost always right.
Yes, the House hearings, the ranking Republican Devin Nunes has been accused of going to the White House, sharing information about the hearing. He's been asked to recuse himself. He has so far refused. So I wish there could be a real investigation so that this could all be settled once and for all. Right. But the goal is not an honest one. Their goal is to prove something that you cannot prove if you tell the truth, to prove that Russia had some involvement. And to say, and, you know, when you read the New York Times or other papers, it's every Russian is, they claim. So if Trump had any relationship, any conversation with any Russian, it is proof of influence from the Russian government. And it's all, you know, even to say flimsy, I don't think does it justice. They just want to create this case. And as I said before, Schiff is being a typical prosecutor and making everybody, making the Trump people and the Russian government look guilty, when in fact the truth is far more logical and far more obvious and is something worthy of investigation. But by going after Russia, they get to kill two birds with one stone. They get to neutralize Trump. They get to keep him from acting on his stated desire to have detente with Russia. And they get to, well, actually, they're killing several birds with one stone. They get to distract their voters and keep Democrats from asking how they lost and why Democrats are wiped out at every level of government all over the country. So they don't want to see what actually may make more sense and which could be illegal, what was the hacking of the DNC emails. But you won't hear Democrats talking about this possibility that I wrote about, because it doesn't serve their purposes.
And then, of course, if they start prosecuting Trump for hacking the DNC, there may also be some prosecutions of people in the DNC for certain acts that were committed against Sanders' campaign by them, and most likely, I would surmise, by the Clinton campaign against Sanders as well. I'm certain that there's some stuff for a committee to look into there, and nobody wants to go there.
Oh, no, they don't want to open that can of worms. So, you know, if we had a better media in this country, somebody else would be looking into this, but they don't want to go there. There were, and one of some of the things, the content of some of the emails is spreading lies about Bernie Sanders of various kinds. One staffer said we should make sure he loses in the South by pointing out that he's Jewish, and that'll make Southerners hate him. I mean, it was really terrible stuff. Not to mention the fact, first of all, the DNC is supposed to be neutral. It was not supposed to be an arm of Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Right.
They weren't supposed to take a stand and choose anyone to win. So
it's actually a violation of its IRS status to do that.
Yes, it is. So they don't want to go there and or reveal the fact that apparently John Podesta used his password was the word password. So the hack was apparently very very easy, not to mention they're just their gross stupidity. So there's corruption and stupidity. They don't want to bring attention to all of that. So they don't want to go there. So unfortunately, this is something that's not going to be examined. But I think it, you know, connecting these dots that I've laid out, I think it makes sense that Farage and Roger Stone and others were involved in the DNC hack. It explains why Trump and Farage are so close. At first, it's unusual that these people on opposite sides of the ocean would have this alliance, but I think they have to stick together.
Well,
I believe having done this together.
Well, you saw that when Brexit was going on, that people were comparing the phenomenon in the UK when Brexit passed to Trump back then, mm-hmm. and then Trump actually had weighed in on that, and you know, as supporting Brexit, certainly immediately thereafter when everyone else was saying what a catastrophe they thought it was, and so you know there are. Political exigencies that I think are served by it, whether or not this, other thing actually happened. But certainly, it's not, you know, off the ranch to assume that the guy who benefited from this did it, and at least investigate whether or not that's true. And for the reasons that you've mentioned, of course, they're not doing that at all.
No, that unfortunately is not going to change. But you know, the connection between Brexit and Trump, the real connection is, as Professor Tony Montero says so eloquently on your program, those two victories are evocative of what's happening in the world, of the crisis of capitalism, the crisis of legitimacy, and the fact that there are millions of people who want to upend the status quo because the status quo does not work for them. And they are telling the world that they want something different. They want a political system that works for them, that does something for them. So the elites may say, well, you know, only an idiot would want Brexit, when in fact more than half the country wanted Brexit. Or there's no way Trump can win, when in fact he was capable of winning and did. So I think it's unfortunate that connection between the two is not examined more, because it tells us about what's happening in the world and what's happening with millions of people around the world and what they would like to see that's different.
And finally, I just want to go back to this part, because it is actually fairly important. The mechanisms of all of this still operate at the end of the day, followed to their logical conclusion, to either removing or negating Trump on the point of blocking war with Russia and forcing in one way or another a war with Russia. And the implications of that, of course, are obvious. It leaves people in a very difficult position, because it appears that at the moment, the only thing standing between us and the pursuit of a war with Russia is Trump able to stand up and act as an independent actor. And that he has almost no allies in the anti-war movement, for example, on that position.
No, he does not, because of what he's doing elsewhere. We see a continuation of the war started by Obama, and then Iraq started by Bush, where hundreds of civilians have been killed recently in these airstrikes. And instead of extricating the U.S. and himself from these situations, we see, unfortunately, what we usually see in the United States, and that's continuity from one president to the next. So I think that makes it difficult for people who wanted to believe, including myself, wanted to believe that there could be a different relationship with Russia. Now there's skepticism, even from those who were hopeful that there could be a change and that there could be détente once again between the U.S. and the Russian Federation.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com under the banner Freedom Rider. This week, her column asks, is Trump the DNC hacker? Margaret, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.